On the program today, we have Douglas Bond's The Betrayal, the 1541 French edition of Calvin's Institutes, and Southern Baptist Theological Seminary 1859-2009 by Gregory A. Wills. All this and more ahead on the Reformed Media Review. This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review, episode number 13. My name is Camden Busey, and I'm actually over at Jeff Waddington's house. Thanks for having me over.
Oh, you're welcome, brother.
Well, we're doing another Reformed Media Review, our look at books and culture, all sorts of different things, analyzing, reviewing, criticizing, mostly just letting you know what's out there. And we have plenty of new books to talk about. There have been many that have been published since the last time we spoke. But Jeff, do we have anything to mention? Do you have anything off the top to mention before we dive right in?
In terms of books, lots of things in terms of new things that aren't out yet. I have a stack of six items here I wanted to mention. I don't know. Did you want to list some of the forthcoming items?
Yeah, well, I can tell you what's out right now. We just have a new release from Brian Chappell with Christ-Centered Worship. That should be interesting. Of course, he's written the ever-so-popular Christ-Centered Preaching,
right.
President of Covenant Seminary. And so this book has been getting some high praise. It looks interesting. I haven't had a chance to look at it. Have you?
No, I haven't. But the Westminster, related to this, the Westminster Seminary Media Center has a series of lectures that he did, I think, last year at the preaching conference on the Christ-centered preaching.
Yes, I was actually there for that. That was a good conference.
They were very good, by the way. I listened to them along with one of the sermons I believe he delivered. The sermon and the two lectures. My own sense after listening to those, or while I was listening to the lectures, was yes, why, of course. This is the way preaching ought to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend those lectures to everyone who believes and is committed to gospel-centered, Christ-centered preaching.
Right, absolutely.
When you hear the stories, his own experience plus the principles that he teaches, I think you'd have to go away saying, yes, this is the right way. The right way, principles for preaching the gospel, the whole counsel of God.
And so it seems natural to have now a book on Christ-centered worship to be coupled with the Christ-centered preaching book.
I've seen it has quite a few positive endorsements, which speaks well for him.
Right. We also have a new discussion guide from Tim Keller, on the Prodigal God, which is his nice little book, speaking about the parable of the prodigal son. But he makes the point on how the parable's often too narrow. Our interpretation is too narrow, but has much to do with God and also with us and the Pharisees in the story, etc. So there's a discussion guide out for that. We've also already mentioned, I believe, Herman J. Selderhaus's The Calvin Handbook. I believe you mentioned that last time. That's available. We also have The Cradle, the Cross, and the Crown, An Introduction to the New Testament by Andreas J. Kustenberger. Also, how do you say this? L. Scott Kellum and Charles J. Quarles. They have the last name's backwards.
I believe that's correct.
But anyway, so have you seen this book at all?
I've looked at it online. But Kustenberger,
I guess would be correct. Get that umlaut in there.
Yes, the E in the English, when you see a German name with O-E, the E is replacing the umlaut. The umlaut, it's a double dot over the U or the O, as the case may be. So when you see, it could be pronounced Kustenberger.
Yes.
Proper German, I guess, would be Kustenberger. Anyways, he's a very solid New Testament scholar. But
done
also
a lot of work in John. Excellent stuff.
But also a historian of sorts, because he's written on Schlatter, I think. Maybe I'm confusing him with... I may be confusing him with Robert Yarbrough. But Kustenberger is a very good scholar, so probably a very worthwhile volume.
So that's available. Don't know if I have anything else to mention, but Jeff, you have a whole stack of books right there.
I do. One that I didn't don't have with me, but I wanted to mention is a novel.
Oh.
And that is called The Betrayal.
I have not heard of
and
this.
And I've just, it's a PNR. It's Douglas Bond. Douglas Bond is a regular PNR novel author.
This isn't the Blade, what is that
Binding
series?
Of the, no, that's, Binding of the Blade. That's L.B. Graham, who did The Binding
that's
of the
right.
Blades.
But those are also novels from yes. PNR, right?
But Douglas Bond did two series, one on the Cross, or the Crown and Covenant, maybe. I forget the series. My wife is better at this than I am. But this book is a novel based upon the life of John Calvin.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's written from the perspective of a young, well, he was a young man when the story starts, who is from the town of Noyon.
Yes.
Who hates Calvin from the get-go. So it's very fascinating. I've just started. I'm only in like 30 or 40 pages into it, but already it's engaging and grabbed my attention.
Now, how much of it is it historical fiction, I'm assuming?
It's historical. Yeah. It is. Wherever it's dealing with the historical elements, it's accurate.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask.
Bond is a, Douglas Bond is a chairman of the English department at Covenant High School, somewhere out, I think in Washington State, but out in the West Coast.
Wonderful.
If this book is any indication, he's a very good writer.
Wonderful. The Betrayal.
So that one's called Betrayal, The Betrayal.
Okay.
It's Presbyterian and Reform Publishing, and it's a novel based on the life of John Calvin.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to take a look at that.
That is definitely, it is very engaging.
Now, what have you actually been reading? You have several books there.
I've got
ready
several
to go.
Volumes here. The first one I wanted to mention is, I may have mentioned this in passing, there's a new edition, and it's in my hand, so of The Institutes of the Christian Religion by John Calvin.
I heard that was good.
Yes. Do you remember that there were five editions in Latin from 1536, mm-hmm. the first edition, to 1559 being the last of the five editions of the Latin. He also himself wrote it in French in several editions. And this is the 1540, an English translation of the 1541 French edition. As I understand it, that as you can see, Camden, our listeners can't see, but it's still fairly, it's smaller than the 1559 edition, but it's still fairly big.
It's hefty.
Yeah, it's still 600 and some odd pages. Elsie McKee, who is a professor at Princeton Theological Seminary, the Archibald Alexander Professor of Reformation Studies in the History of Worship at Princeton, has done a fine job rendering this into very readable English. What this apparently lacks, say, as over against the 1559 edition, is a lot of the interaction
sure.
between Calvin and some of his opponents.
Sure.
But anyway, this definitely... So now we have in English, in addition to the several English translations of the final 1559 edition, we also have an English translation of the 1536, the first edition, which is also translated by Ford Lewis Battles. He did the best known 1559 edition.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's called The Institutions of the Christian Religion. Okay, so it's a slight variation. And now we have this one in the middle.
Yes.
So you'll want to be on the lookout for that. At some point in the future, I will have a review of it in some Elios. All right. Now,
next up.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this is that hefty stuff.
Yeah, it just made a big thud when you dropped it there.
Whoa, thud. Thud. Yeah. The next book I wanted to mention is by Kevin DeYoung and Ted Kluck, called Why We Love the Church in Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
controversial.
This is good stuff.
Yeah.
These are the same guys who wrote the book Why We're Not Emergent. You may have heard they've been making the circuit, being interviewed on all sorts of shows, and I understand that we're trying to do it. We're trying to set them up to interview them, but this is kind of this is written in response to calls for Christians to stop going to church.
Well, we hear some of that
in a book called Revolution.
We hear some a theological case from that from what's the guy's name? Campin, something like that.
Who?
What's the guy's name? He's got a radio show.
Oh, you mean Harold Camping?
Camping.
Yeah, okay. I don't know that Camping is in their scope.
Probably not, but he
that'd be the same problem.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar Harold Camping and the family radio. By the way, he recently had a debate, if you want to call it that, with James White.
Oh, I heard.
Chris Arnes and program called Iron Sharpens Iron.
Yeah, and out of New York. Yeah, it's a fun program.
Out of Long Island. You can actually go to the Alpha and Omega Ministry website and you can link up with the debate.
Yeah, aomin.org.
Yeah, it was a debate on Dr. White's side, but it was anything but a debate on Mr. Camping's side. But we'll leave it to you to listen to that. But this is more aimed at the kind of arguments that you find in the book Revolution by George Barna, The Shack by William Armstrong? I forget who the author. I don't know. So they're aiming at the younger audience who would be inclined to read that kind of literature and follow suit and, you know, stop going to church or try to be a Christian without joining a church, which, of course, is unbiblical and deadly.
And unconfessional.
Unconfessional, yeah. All of the above.
Out of which there is no ordinary possibility right. of salvation.
That's just bad. Stupid. Let's just call it what it is. It's stupid, stupid, stupid.
Because now, that's where the means of grace are.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, and this has been said by others, so it's not original with me, George Barna is the one who talked the church into being seeker sensitive in many ways. He wasn't the only one who said it. I mean, seeker sensitivity began probably with the church growth movement. One could argue it goes back to Finney and all that kind of stuff, but the church growth movement probably encouraged what we call seeker sensitive churches. Barna is the one who said you must become like the crowd you want to attract. And then he discovers, oh, it's lousy. So you can actually be a Christian while playing on the golf course on Sunday. This is going to be a good book. These guys are funny and sharp, witty, and very good. This is not a boring reading, okay, folks?
So why we love the church.
Why we love the church in praise of institutions and organized religion.
Published by whom?
The Moody Press.
Moody Press.
Of all things.
Nice.
Moody Press.
Okay. Not as big of a thud as the Institutes on that one. This one might give Institutes a run for its money. What do we have here?
This is Gregory A. Wills' book, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, 1859 to 2009.
Been getting a lot of attention lately online.
Yes. This is, of course, the 150th anniversary of Southern Baptist Seminary.
Right.
I've already mentioned that, and some of our listeners may have seen my plug for the biography of James Pettigrew Boyce, who was really the founding force behind the establishment of Southern Baptist Seminary. Excellent biography by Tom Nettles. This is kind of a companion piece. This tells the story of all 150 years, not just Boyce, not just Basil Manley or some of the other founding faculty members. This begins with Boyce and ends with Moeller.
There you go.
Who is a return to the principles of James Pettigrew Boyce.
According to the PBS documentary, didn't Al Moeller just take the seminary off the course that the founders set?
He actually returned it to the. What he did was to take it off the course that the liberal academics at the seminary had set.
Really?
Yes. And it's all in here, including pictures For those of you who are challenged, there's some really, I mean, if you, some of us like to know what the school grounds
look
like.
So does it capture Al Mohler's devil horns? Or?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, right here. No.
Seeing as
we comment on media besides books, I would recommend, you could probably do a Google search.
Yeah, on the PBS documentary.
There is a two-part address that he gave, I think, before the Sovereign Grace Conference, which would be what C.J. Mahaney's group, where he described in, I think it's all together like two and a half hours.
I think
hours.
I've seen, I haven't heard it all, but
well,
I downloaded it at one point.
It on my computer. It's really, it's a compelling story of the whole experience of him being called, interviewed, and then appointed, elected president of the seminary, and then what he did to clean house.
Yeah, and the I don't know if he gets into it, but the terrible things that happened to him and his family as a result.
He does. Okay. He gets into it. He has a very good sense of humor, and you know, looking back now, that was 1993, I believe, he was appointed to be president and went in and had to clean house, and he was only in his 30s, at the time. Very very young to be president of the largest seminary in the world. There are now some 4,000 plus students.
My word.
We've interviewed, of course, Dr. Russell Moore, who's the vice president of the seminary for academic affairs at the seminary. And we're hoping to be able to interview some other folk. We've interviewed Dr. Michael Haken. Right. So we've interviewed two of the faculty there. Great school. Lovely campus from the website and the pictures in the
Louisville's
book.
A great place. I was there a few years ago.
And when you read the biography of Boyce, you'll see, I mean, there's so much, 90% we would agree with, you know, we would differ with them on Baptist ecclesiology and their credo baptism, but on the Calvinism, they were, you got to remember, Boyce was trained at Old Princeton under Archibald Alexander, Samuel Miller, and Charles Hodge. So, I mean, he drank that in, or however you say that.
He drunked it.
Whatever. He did it, and that stuck with him.
Wonderful.
And so definitely look for those. That Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, 1859 to 2009, that's a hard title to remember. It's Oxford University Press, by the way. And it's a lovely, well-made volume.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what, OUP, what was it, about $200?
Actually, no. It's 30-something.
Wonderful. OUP for 30-something?
I don't know how that happened.
I guess it's probably, I don't know.
Maybe we shouldn't say anything because maybe someone at Oxford will wake up and say, oh, that's not priced properly.
Yeah. Well, anyway. We love OUP. They put out some great things, but it's an academic press, so what you get with academic
press. But they're a bigger
presses.
One so that they do have the ability, they have a bigger market.
Economy
of scale, right? All right. The next volume is the latest in the Reformed Expository Commentary series. We've already mentioned one new book by Dr. Brian Chappell, who's president of Covenant Theological Seminary out in St. Louis, Missouri, the official seminary of the Presbyterian Church in America.
PCA.
This is the new volume on the Book of Ephesians in this series, and it looks to be, again, a very worthy addition to the series. I haven't yet had. I've looked at certain.
You often read those for devotional reading at night.
I do. That's why they're up here on the computer table, because that's where I will put that. Because these are my part of my devotional reading.
That's a good practice.
Is to read. Well, I read the Bible.
Yes.
Plus one of those sections.
We assumed as much.
A reading of the Well, there are certain people out there in the world who think otherwise, but...
Man, you're too sensitive. We crack one joke, and then all of a sudden...
Yeah. So that's an excellent... that's a great series, by the way. It's beginning to become big. Large, I mean. You've got the two-volume Luke.
I remember the days
Matthew.
When I had, two volumes, and that was all that was available.
Not anymore.
No, the bookshelf's filling
gone.
Up.
All right, moving
couple
on.
Couple more.
Next, the next volume is one that we've already mentioned in the past.
Yeah, but you have much more to say about it now.
Yeah, this is Presuppositional Apologetics, Stated and Defended by Greg Bahnsen. This was written, I believe, in the 70s.
It was lost.
May have been when he was a professor at Reformed Theological Seminary in Jackson. It got lost. I think it fell behind a file cabinet in what was his office out in California. I forget now.
Didn't he like go looking for it?
He did. And he began the process back in those days. This is before personal computers, right?
Yeah.
He began the process of editing the proofs.
Okay.
And it wasn't that he died, because this is the 70s, right? So yeah. He became distracted with life.
Yeah.
And the project fell by the wayside, and they had, after he passed away,
behind a file cabinet.
They thought that it had been lost, and as they were cleaning out the office, lo and behold, they found the manuscript.
Wow.
Now, this is not the whole manuscript.
Really?
This is, I believe, two-thirds. Because basically, he never finished it.
Oh.
What happened is, this is the first and second part, okay? And, of course, obviously, it's Presuppositional Apologetics, Stated and Defended. I think it's a great book for Dr. Sproul to read.
Oh.
Might as well get my jabs in when I can. Actually, it would be. I mean, even if he would disagree with it, he'd understand, you know, what we disagree about.
Oh, yeah.
Not that he doesn't already. That's a cheap shot.
Well, they wrote an entire book about it.
Yes. Supposedly. But we'll leave that alone. We'll leave it to you to figure out what book we're talking about. I was saying that this is only the first two parts. The third part looked like it was going to be a history of Western philosophy, like the lectures he gave, right? Except apparently he never completed it. So they've taken the third part and left it out of this book. And apparently they're working with several Vantillians. I don't know who.
Oh, are they going to work? Do a co-written thing?
So their plan, I guess, is that they'll have another book.
Wonderful.
That will be partially written by Dr. Bahnsen and partially written by whoever else they get
right
to do it. So this includes, this is a wonderful statement and defense of presupposition. It's probably the most systematic that I would recommend this almost for anybody who is interested in apologetics, who's committed to learning how to do it biblically, that this would be a great introduction. Dr. Bahnsen's book, Always Ready, is a good biblical, dealing with the biblical basis.
Yes.
And then this would be the follow-up that gives a real systematic presentation. Now, what he does, for instance, is Presuppositional Apologetics, Positively Stated. And this is where he gets into the point I've made in the past about metaphysics and epistemology not being divorced.
That's
right. Makes a big deal about that.
Right.
And then you've got a positive presentation in the first part of the book. Then the second part of the book is a criticism of Gordon Clark, Edward J. Carnell, Francis Schaeffer, and these three men. You may understand why he's going after them. Do you know, Camden, why he's going after them?
Were they representatives of different methods?
Actually, they were understood to be representatives of some form of presuppositionalism.
Well, Schaeffer.
Right.
I'm not as familiar with Carnell, E.J. Yeah.
Okay, Gordon Clark. Carnell was a student of both Clark and Van Til.
Okay.
Which made him a very interesting...
Oh, I remember now. I remember from the Van Til bio now.
Edward J. Carnell was the one of the founding faculty of Fuller Theological Seminary out in California.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Carnell was president of the seminary for some time.
Yeah.
And you may remember that he was found dead in a hotel room in 1967. And there's question as to whether he had an overdose of medication or had taken his life. I guess we'll never know this side of heaven, new heavens and the new earth, what happened. But basically, I will tell you that he takes these men apart, and quite frankly, how they could have considered themselves presuppositional is beyond me, because the more he dissects them, the more they look like classical apologists.
Well, this does come back to the problem of the word presuppositional. And Dr. Oliphant at Westminster, who's the apologetics professor, one of the two, he doesn't prefer the term presuppositional for that very reason, I believe, because it's hard to, it doesn't really define, it's too broad.
It actually, but it doesn't even it doesn't fit. The amazing thing is after you read these chapters, you're scratching your head thinking, well, where on earth did they ever get the name?
Yeah.
I mean, how did they get the name attached?
Right.
Now, very often what we'll say is that, say, Gordon Clark is a rational presuppositionalist, as opposed to Van Til and us being revelational presuppositionalists. And I think Schaefer will solve the cultural presuppositionalist.
Right.
So we reckon, even those of us, you know, we're
he also has a heavy dose of existentialism in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm sure the so I mean it's very interesting. And then he has, like, there's a couple appendices in there on different topics, but this is I have to say that this is probably the most organized discussion of not perfect, but it is probably in one place the best. This, along with Always Ready and Van Til's Apologetic Readings and Analysis.
Right.
If you don't understand presuppositionalism at the end, you're probably...
So if you were going to read those three, what order would you read them?
I would probably do Always Ready, then this volume, and then Van Til's Apologetic last.
I probably would do that too. Yeah.
I think that's the order I would do them in.
Yeah, that's good.
People have asked, I guess, but and that I think now having read that, that's how I would do it. Now, one more book, and it's one we've actually talked about in the past, and it's not brand new. It's about a year old, and that is A Theological Guide to Calvin's Institutes, Essays, and Analysis. It was actually the first volume released in the Calvin 500 series. There are four volumes out and another four slated for release in this set. This is edited by David Hall and Peter Lilbeck. Now, David Hall, of course, is the editor for the whole series. It's an excellent book. Chapters by there are 20 chapters. William Barker writes on the historical context of the institutes. Will Barker was one of my professors when I started at Westminster.
Yeah, history.
In the church history department, a very good writer and historian. And then there's the chapter on the primal and simple knowledge by somebody named K. Scott Oliphant. I think I've heard of him. Calvin's Doctrine of Holy Scripture by Robert Raymond.
Yeah.
The True and Triune God by Doug Kelly. Very good chapter.
We've had him on the program before?
Yes, the Triune God, the first volume of his new systematic.
Right.
Election and Predestination by Scott Clark. That's a good chapter as well. Scott does a fine job. Dr. Clark does a fine job with the historical discussion of that. Creation and Providence by Joseph Piper. A Shattered Vase, that's dealing with the man is... The Tragedy of Sin in Calvin's Thought by Michael Horton. I've heard that name before.
I think he's written a few things.
Yeah, that's right. Peter Lilbeck's chapter on Calvin's interpretation of the history of salvation, and so on and so forth. Dr. Gaffin has written a chapter on justification in union with Christ. Bill Edgar has written a chapter on ethics, the Christian life, and good works according to Calvin. Very good chapter, by the way. David Calhoun does a fine chapter on prayer in the Institutes.
Mm.
The longest chapter, or one of the longest chapters in the Institute, 70 pages on prayer. Godfrey on Calvin and worship. Joseph Hall does a nice job on the church government. And David Hall, of course, on state government, or government, or the state.
When he's written the Calvin in the Public Square.
Yes, it's a little...
Another book in the series.
It's not just a summary. I was expecting it to be a summary of the larger book, but there's actually some stuff in there that's not in the other book.
Oh, wonderful.
So it is a summary and more. And then Venema does Calvin's Doctrine of the Last Things, which is very good.
Yeah.
And then there is a bibliography, Essential Calvin Bibliography by Richard Gamble and Zachary Kyle. So that definitely... The whole series... each of the volumes that I've read so far have been very good. Mm-hmm. The next volume slated for release is a Calvin and Commerce, so dealing with economics.
That'll be a really interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one on in the public square is very fascinating as well, dealing with the what we call political Calvinism.
Right, right.
Showing how the Calvin began a trajectory of thought, reformed thought that basically led to
Kuyper.
Well, yes, but not just Kuyper.
All right. I
mean, there's a whole host of theologians and political philosophers who are Calvinistic. Between Calvin and now, who would trace the idea of republican form of government, both in the church, what we call Presbyterianism, and in the nation, what we have in the United States, more or less going back to Calvin in some sense, and Calvin would have argued no, going back to the Bible,
right?
Because he saw Israel prior to the monarchy as a God-ordained republic. And you're thinking, where did he get that from? Well, Jethro's recommendation to Moses to have leaders, judges over thousands, hundreds,
yes,
and tens.
Right.
That, for him, is federalism.
Okay.
That's republicanism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he would find the...
No, I can understand
one
that.
Place where he would find that.
Huh. Well, those are several books to go check out, yep. And I know we've had some listeners get a hold of us and say that they lament us going through so many books because it just makes their reading list longer and longer and they can't read them all as fast as we talk about them. But
and neither can I. So don't feel bad.
There's plenty out there to read, a lot of new stuff, and we'll keep you updated when new things come out. Just keep tabs on us at www.reformedforum.org/RMR. You can also follow us on Twitter at Reformed Forum. A lot of stuff available there. Thank you for listening. We hope you join us again on the Reformed Media Review.
Tolle Legge.